Hi. Wow, that's dark all of a sudden. Thank you for coming. Given that this is the one day of nice weather at Austin for South by Southwest this year, thank you very much for coming. This panel is about SSO, single sign-on, in particular, why does it suck so often? If you were following the signs outdoors that were about the panel for free margaritas and nachos, I'm very sorry for the minor act of deception, but we had to get people in somehow.
And if you thought single sign-on was a dating site, I'm sorry, it's not. It's actually a dry technical matter.
We'll try. Hi, I'm Matthew Rothenberg, or you might know me as MRoth. That's what a lot of people in the tech industry call me. I was head of product until fairly recently at Flickr. I have now went over to Bitly, where I'm working on something new that we're not talking about yet, so sorry. Joining me today, Matt Kelly from Facebook, Cynthia Johansson from Twitter, and Joseph Smar from Google. Actually, can we have the lights up just a slight bit? Because what would really help us out, since our goal for this panel is to talk through this all with you about how to help you implement, it would be great for us to kind of get a sense of who in the room has what background. So as lame as and trite as the show of hands thing is, it would really help us to know how many of you, your primary job function is you're a designer during the day. Okay, great. And how many of you are a developer or some sort of engineer? Okay, I think that's where we're going to be. And how many of you, probably like many of us on stage, are useless overhead, e.g. management? Okay. So you claim you make decisions about this sort of thing and then take the credit. Perfect. All right. And one last question, thanks for bearing with us. How many of you have either implemented or attempted to implement SSO at your job? Okay, actually a lot of people. Fantastic. So I will skip a bit about then the introduction about what SSO is, but just in case, to get everyone on the same page, you know now when you go to sign into a website, increasingly you're not seeing a little username and password field, you're seeing a sign up with Facebook, sign in with Twitter. Behind the scenes, what's happening, you're authorizing that website to send over your information, and the website you're creating an account on just uses that information to create an account. From a user experience perspective, it looks like magic. I didn't have an account before, suddenly I do have an account. I didn't really have to do anything. The reason this is appealing to someone designing a website is that it turns out login systems are a pain in the ass to implement. In theory, it should be easy, but when you look at all the little pieces, you want to verify email addresses because you don't want people signing up to spam. You want to deduplicate. You want to do all these things. It turns out you're recreating a whole bunch of solved technical problems. And wouldn't it be great if you could just stand on the shoulders of other people and let other people take care of that? And I can pretty much guarantee you that companies like Google and Twitter and Facebook have spent a lot more time on their account creation process than you have. So really appealing if you could just tap into that and take advantage of it. From a user experience perspective, single sign-on seems even more appealing. So you're making a website. You want people to have a profile. We want them to have a real name so that their friends recognize them. We want them to have a happy little avatar so that, you know, they don't look like a boring gray box. All of these things. Well, with every one of those steps, you know, the classic design problem is the more information you're asking people for up front, the more fall-off there's going to be, the less likely someone's going to get through this process. With SSO, in theory, you can get all of that for free because you can bet a vast majority of your users already have entered that information on another website. So this seems like a great promise, right? This seems absolutely fantastic. And for the most part, it is. A few years ago, we implemented it at Flickr. We added Google and Facebook login. And overnight, the amount of people signing up for an account went up by about 25%. At the scale of a large website, that can mean tens of thousands of new customers coming in every day that wouldn't be there otherwise. We recently added it to Bitly as well. We added Twitter and Facebook login, and we saw pretty much the same numbers. So in my experience, that's actually just been the number we see in terms of increase. So win-win, fantastic. More customers coming in, what could be wrong? Well, it turns out we also created a lot of problems that we weren't aware of when we implemented this. So the day after we first implemented SSO at Flickr, the next day our number one customer care email like that was coming in from people changed. Those don't change very often. Suddenly, the number one request we got, the number one thing people were writing in was, "Oh my God, you deleted all my photos, you bastards." The reason was that people were coming back and signing in with a different method than they'd signed in before. We weren't detecting properly in all cases that those people were in fact the same people. But since we were getting all of their account information and doing all the right things to happily bootstrap them with a new account, they saw, "Welcome, Matthew Rothenberg." They saw their normal user avatar. They saw all the information that made them think they were logged in, because in fact they were. But they were logged into a new account that said, "You have zero photos, why don't you upload one?" That tends to freak people out. There's a whole slew of problems like that that we're going to try to get into some of them on this panel and how you can avoid them. I'm not going to get into the details of all of them right now, but I will say that in general, the promise of SSO for a website designer or developer is that it's so easy. This will make it way easier than just doing it on your own. In practice, when we implemented this, both the lead product manager and the lead engineer on the project got so frustrated that they both threatened to quit. I didn't used to believe in karma, but the product manager did eventually quit, and in a great karmic twist of fate, ended up going to Twitter and becoming responsible for the same systems over at Twitter, and has joined us here today. So my revenge is Cynthia is going to join us on the panel today. So in general, SSO has clear, massive potential, but it also has a lot of potential complexity. The goal for this panel is to help you as a designer, a developer, a useless decision maker on a website, to make the educated decisions about if you might want to implement SSO, how you would do so, what are the trade-offs and decisions you're going to make, what are some of the best practices, what things should you look out for to make it suck less, and looking towards the future, as people who are all working in an industry together and working on these platforms, how can we make it better for the web as a whole? So to aid in this, we have a platform representative from each of the three largest SSO providers, Google, Facebook, and Twitter. All of them also have interesting backgrounds and experience around designing these sort of systems. So let's get started. To get started, I'd like to ask each of you to introduce yourself in a bit more detail and tell us a little bit about your company's platform.
All right. So I'm Joseph Smar, currently at Google working on Google+. And previously I was the CTO of Plaxo, where we were one of the first large-scale OpenID relying parties. I was also involved a lot in OpenID and OAuth and other sort of open standards like that, and was a director of the OpenID Foundation for several years. So I'm very passionate about single sign-on and also keenly aware of all the various ways in which it sucks so often. Google obviously is an OpenID provider as well as OAuth provider, and so you know there's lots of ways to be able to sign in with a Google account, and then you know access all the APIs that Google has as well. And some of that is nicely packaged up, you know, and ready to use, and some of it you have to kind of go in and figure out which different API calls to get which different pieces, because obviously when you're talking about Google, it's a pretty wide surface area. And then, you know, on Android, obviously, there's the account manager as well, which is sort of a form of SSO, but, you know, natively.
I'm Cynthia Johansson. I'm the product manager at Twitter responsible for the API. Please don't hate me. And I began as a CS degree at MIT, began as a software engineer at Yahoo, turned into a product manager there, where I was working at Flickr for a bit of it, and then transitioned to Twitter after that. So the Twitter SSO platform provides several different methods that can be used to bootstrap any application that wants to build upon our API. So those include an authenticate method. That's just a really lightweight way to get the identity of a user. The next one is authorize, which is a deeper integration into the API and more representative. You represent the user to Twitter. And then recently, in the last year, we launched a deep integration with iOS, which makes it very easy for app developers to integrate with that platform as well.
Hi, I'm Matt Kelly. I'm on developer relations. I primarily focus on mobile. I've been at Facebook for about 2.5 years now. Worked on everything from social plugins to Open Graph to our recent mobile platform launch. Prior to that, I worked for a video game startup for about 4 years, and I was tasked with building a platform on top of all these platforms. So building a gaming platform on top of MySpace, Facebook, SciWorld, Bebo, Twitter, name a platform, and I probably had to touch it. I think I'm most excited to talk about Facebook Platform for a couple of reasons. I think one is we're really, I think, leading the charge on figuring things out like SSO and all the complexities around it, so making it easier for developers and users. That's really the goal. The second piece is we're also blazing the path around things like social plugins, where you can actually, you don't need to use SSO, but you can interact with Facebook just through iframes, which is pretty compelling. And then the third piece is really the value beyond SSO, which I was deeply involved with pre-Facebook working for a startup. I think things like Open Graph, it's very interesting combined with SSO in terms of growing startups. It's really greenfield. We see companies like Pinterest that integrated with us and saw a 66% increase in growth, and as a result, their company and the product is blowing up.
In a good
because
way.
They have a great yeah. So that's about it, and that's why I'm excited to be here.
Great, thanks, guys. So let's start simply. I'm developing a new website. It's going to be awesome. It's a social networking site for pets that like cosplay. I'm just getting started. I'm doing the technical planning. Sell me on this. Why should I use SSO? What benefit am I going to get?
Did you start at the end?
Go in any order you want.
I mean, basically, you want to get users in as quickly as possible, and you probably want to offer a personalized experience for them, so you want to know information about them, and then you're probably going to want to grow virally by being able to let those users share out to the network they're on, and all of the networks up here have lots of users who are already have accounts and filled out data and are using it every day, and so you definitely want to make it easy for people to come try out their site. And I think especially now as SSO becomes more common, I think it's all the more of a turnoff when you come to a site that hits you with another sign-up form and you're like, ugh, I really don't want to do this again. Whereas if you feel like you can just skip in, then I think you have a much better chance of doing that. So I think it is, especially for young startups, I think at this point you'd pretty much be crazy not to be doing that.
I would add to that that a big part in any sign-up flow is the risk of losing a user every single step. That any additional field or any additional button that a person has to click is one more chance of someone to drop out of the flow. And not only do you get through SSO the chance to get someone going with their process or going with their products immediately, but you can also get a deep integration into three of the top publishing platforms as well. That you can actually publish through Twitter something that's very relevant about that user to people that follow them, and then you also tap into the guerrilla viral network that is incredibly valuable for a bootstrap startup.
Yeah, I think to add on that, I think your use case was a cosplay site, which is interesting.
For pets.
I'm not sure what that is, but
this is South by Southwest. We're talking about the future.
cosplay for pets. It's interesting. I think if it's cosplay for adults, you may not want to share to certain networks, or you may want to actually restrict who you share with. But if it's your pets, you know, I think to the previous points, the obvious sell of SSO is you get a lot of data that was already built for you, and it's been built for the last 7 or 8 years, so you know the data is good and it's secure, and the users who they say they are. And yeah, beyond that, I think pet cosplay could be something interesting you could share with your friends.
Well, you sort of touched a little bit on security. We didn't mention that. I mean, even if you want to go through the work to set up username and password and all that kind of stuff, it's actually hard to really keep that secure and make sure people aren't, you know, being hijacked or whatever. And our companies all have whole teams that spend an enormous amount of effort to make sure that users really are who they say they are, and that they're not getting hijacked, and that they really have the right credentials and all of that. And so, as you can imagine, and especially now offering like Google has two-factor authentication where you can have it, you know, SMS you a token or whatever. And so you're presumably not going to have that level of security on your site. And for some sites, that matters more than less. But it's definitely getting to the point now where you can actually get a better quality account manager experience as well as just existing users.
So let's not get right away into some of the edge cases, but even before we talk about that, a lot of the edge cases come from the fact that you're potentially interoperating with multiple services or you have an existing login system. So if I have a website, if I'm making a new website and I don't, you know, have the ability to start from scratch, is it actually feasible to just completely throw away my own login system and just use SSO? Or if I have an existing login system, could I throw it away and use SSO? Or, you know, will people ever really be totally comfortable with that?
You know, I think it depends on how early your site is and exactly what you want it to do. I think there are an increasing number of examples of sites that really are just, you know, if they're something building on the Twitter ecosystem, you'll see them just use Twitter as their login system, or you'll see maybe a game that's just using Facebook because they just want to know who you are and let you publish out scores and things like that. And so in those cases, or, you know, in the case of Google, a lot of people who make enterprise apps use Google as their account system because they want to show up like Gmail in your calendar and your third app and, you know, just use the Google login system just like all the other Google properties do. So I think it's definitely, and for getting started, actually, if I were starting a startup tomorrow, I would just start using SSO because I wouldn't want to have to do all the work to make my own account system. And as you get bigger, if you want to have a different kind or a deeper or whatever relationship with your users, or if you get to the point where for some people they don't want to use one of these third-party sites for whatever reasons, then you probably end up making your own system. But at that point, it's already a good problem to have. Like you saw that with Quora, right? Quora started out being just Facebook, and now they've got their own account system as well. But it sort of helped get them up and running quickly.
I agree with what Joseph said. A big part of any kind of upkeep of a system is making sure it stays up, that they're constantly logged in, that they don't have to re-log in. And one of the virtues of using an SSO is that if they're using Twitter and your site, they're always going to be logged in. And then you don't have to worry about them forgetting their password, having to go through the reclaim flow, having to figure out the security around that. And at the same time, they're able to use your product without any friction.
Yeah, and I think when you're starting a company, there are two major issues you have to get over, which is, one, user acquisition, so actually getting users to your site, as well as completing that loop and getting them in your site, registered, authed, and contributing back, right, to a social network or something else that can get growth for you. And I think SSO is really the gateway for all of that functionality, and it's proved to be very successful so far. So, probably if I wasn't at Facebook, I mean, before Facebook, I was building on top of Facebook and other platforms, I would absolutely start with Facebook.
Snap.
Yeah. And other platforms,
start with Twitter.
But broadly, I think it helps you with distribution. We touched on security a bit. It provides you good identity, as well as the development experience is pretty simple. You don't have to deal with a huge server architecture. You can just, you can actually, particularly on mobile, code everything client-side, so you don't need to deal with that complexity yourself.
Same thing at Twitter.
So, you all have awesome platforms, but they're all slightly different. So, I'm building, okay, let's say you've convinced me I'm going to not do my own login system. I'm just going to use SSO. I'm not totally sold yet that I would just want to use one of you guys because maybe, you know, most people have a Facebook account, but some people just don't like Facebook. I know it's crazy. Not everyone's sharing on Twitter and, you know, there are still some people who aren't on Gmail, right?
Right. Or they just don't want to use it for whatever your service is, right? I mean, I think different people have different attitudes about the persona they've got on each of these sites and what other sites feel like it's part of that same world.
Yeah. So my question is, assuming that I'm going to use multiple providers, which I think, you know, we could make... Well, actually, does anyone want to make an argument for using a single provider for an independent website? Or is it...
I mean, I think it depends on the product you're trying to build. If you're trying to build a product that has a very deep social and a limited network approach, I would say Facebook is great. And then if you also want to build a network that deals with a lot of people that are outside Silicon Valley that span a wide breadth of different kinds of industries, then Google is great. For everything else, including those two, you should use Twitter. But no, I kid slightly. It's but it is a very public platform, and that's probably one more appropriate for if you're looking at a public sharing experience.
Yeah, I think there's definitely audience considerations, and I think the functionality the platform delivers. So, you know, can you publish back to the platform? What kind of data can you get from the platform? Those types of things. I think there's also, particularly if you're starting a company, where do you put your effort, right? And it's very easy to go down this path of let's use a provider like Janrain, which allows you to have access to every single network. And I think actually that's, It's interesting depending on what you're trying to build again, but it's broadly, I think if you're a startup, you should focus your resources on a few. If only one, like Quora did or Pinterest did at the beginning, just to make sure that all of the flows, the user experience is actually good, and you're getting good distribution from the network. So this is, you know, our most successful companies, I think, A-B test everything they publish back to Facebook, and that's broadly why they're successful, right? And I think focusing on a couple of networks or just one can have a lot more value than a scattershot.
Yeah, and I think you basically want to divide the problem into two pieces. One is the parts you can abstract from any one of the particular networks, like I need to get some user ID for this user, I want to get a name and a profile photo or what have you. And, you know, architecturally, you just want to sort of say, okay, I get that somehow, and now everything else uses that. And at that point, you know, pushing in one or more of these networks, you know, it shouldn't really matter, right? You should be able to swap them in and out or add them in. It shouldn't necessarily cause you to rethink how you're doing things. When it comes time to specific sort of API integration, obviously the services offer different enough things that you're going to have to sort of think about what you want to work with. And, you know, they also got different users, right? Like you were sort of mentioning it jokingly about for pets, but if it's not something where you expect people to use real identity and the real face, well, you know, these sites are all sort of different about what types of profiles users are bringing to the site and how comfortable they're going to want to be and how much the expectation is that it's you're displaying on that site as your same profile as you were on the original site. And so those are all considerations you have to make.
Well, so where we are now is that there are some cases when it makes sense to use one, but it seems like eventually you're growing, you're going to want to use multiple things, maybe even coordinate with your own login system. So why is it so damn hard, guys? Because when I go to do this, you know, okay, my site that does pet stuff, we want to send out a weekly newsletter, so we need an email address. Some of you let us ask for email address, some of you don't. So we have to keep up to date with which, you know, it, right now, for example, we can ask for an email address from Facebook, we can't ask for one from Twitter. So we have to detect whether or not we're getting that. We have to do exactly what we're not supposed to do with SSO, which is throw up a trap screen that interrupts the, yes, you're ready to get started. Oh, wait, but we're actually going to ask you one other thing. In other cases, we get very different forms. So, you know, Facebook's giving us a real name that's not necessarily unique. Twitter's giving us a screen name that's always unique but can change at any time. How is this in any single site provider supposed to manage the complexity of all these incompatible systems, or not necessarily incompatible, but slightly different?
It's definitely tricky. I mean, the standards support really hasn't become as mature as I think a lot of us that were working on this a few years ago were hoping it would. I mean, a lot of these sites have supported OpenID or OAuth or other things to some extent, but really the UX is different. What fields you get are different. A lot of the functionality isn't standards-based. It's because, you know, the sites are different, and so they've done a lot of kind of customizations and things. And so it unfortunately really is something where you can't just implement the pattern and it all works. You have to kind of do some pretty manual work with each new site you want to onboard. And of course, the problem with that too is, you know, maybe we're like the three hot providers today, but how many sites do you go to that still have, you know, dig this, delicious this, whatever on the site? And it's kind of ossified from, you know, 5 years ago when those were the sites everyone's using and now they're not. And so you're kind of potentially painting yourself into that same corner when you have to pick individual sites and not use standards. Now, I mean, maybe Google, Facebook, and Twitter have a bit more longevity, you know, baked in at this point, but it is something that, unfortunately, is kind of just the state of affairs. You have to kind of pick the winners today and go deep with them and, you know, hope that it won't be too hard to change later if you want to.
I mean, another thing to add to that is that you're getting different kinds of data from the three networks as well. And people generally have slightly different social graphs on each of the three networks, mm-hmm. too, if they are a member of each one. And therefore, they're going to have slightly different expectations in terms of what they want to control and what they don't. So, for instance, at Twitter, we don't necessarily know your favorite movies, but people might be very protective about their direct messages, which is not available on Facebook. So this isn't something that can be necessarily standardized across the networks, and it's something that you as a developer, if you're literally focusing on what the user is expecting and making sure that the data that you're getting is data the user is comfortable with, I think that's your baseline, that you make sure the user is okay with it, it's transparent. And when you do work with that data, it's at the user's approval.
Yeah, I think broadly that's how I think about it as well. Is again, I think, you know, it's like flavors of ice cream. You have many different platforms that do many different things and have different features. And Generally, what we're targeting is to give you whatever data you need. We, you know, run the gamut from real name to movie likes to reads, listens, watches, all kinds of data now. But there might be certain circumstances. Like a good example is actually Battle.net had an issue where they launched, I think it was called Real ID or something similar to that, and they got a huge backlash for their community because they were used to pseudonyms, right? And Battle.net actually uses Facebook to friend match. So what they did was actually just continue using Facebook, but they added a pseudonym on top, which was actually visible to non-friends. So I think there's different ways to finesse this. And again, it really boils down to what are you actually building and what does the platform provide, both in terms of data, and I would even argue almost more importantly is, you know, what's the value behind SSO, like distribution or the ability to interact with other friends, that type of thing.
So this brings up two interesting issues here. One is identity and one is permissioning. So let's talk about identity first. So with all of these systems, some elements of identity come along for free, not just login, right? As a site implementing one of these SSO things, the choice is up to the site provider whether or not they want to take and, you know, persist that identity. And that seems like one of the great promises of SSO is that you can take that, but you're all alluding to cases where that can cause additional problems, right? So as an independent site, when should I be taking identity and how should I be doing? Should I just take it and always sync it across, make it persistent? Do I need to import it but let people change it? What are the best practices around this? What have you guys seen?
Yeah, this is a really complicated issue because, I mean, it's a real world issue. It's not just a technology issue, right? I mean, it's a question of what type of relationship do you want to have with your user and how do you think your users want to express themselves on your site and how different is your site from the rest of the things they use? I mean, even within Google, we have this problem, right? Like, you use your Google account to sign into YouTube, but maybe you want to use a pseudonym on YouTube to share your videos, but you need to know that it's the same account, but not have other people know that it's you. I mean, it's you know, it's confusing, right? But because they basically said, well, gee, a lot of people are going to want to share videos without using the real name, and we want to let them do that, right? Whereas a lot of the other Google properties, we've said, especially recently as we're trying to consolidate stuff, no, use your real identity, use the same account everywhere. It just simplifies things so much, and you don't have all this like, oh, do they know that that's the same me on Picasa when I share the Picasa photo on Google Plus? And I mean, there were these sort of conundrums that even like the engineers couldn't figure out. And so it was like, wait, okay. Maybe there's some edge cases where people won't be happy, but in general, most people want to share this under their real identity, and so let's just have that be consolidated. So those sort of user-level trade-offs, before you ever think about what code to write, you have to think about with your site. You know, for a lot of sites, again, starting off, it's probably fine to just use the existing identity you get from one of these other sites and link back to their page and so forth, and it'll help you know who the user is. But, you know, then if that information changes, do you automatically unchange it on your site? Do you ask them if the user changes it locally? Do you let them sync back? Do you even let them? These are things you basically just have to figure out whether the pain is worth the benefit, you know, for your particular user base.
Yeah, I think, again, this boils down to what stage are you at in your site? I think broadly, I would tend to rely more on the platform's data, where it's more actively updated. So, you know, things like profile picture, I would highly recommend you just use, you know, Facebook's profile picture or Twitter's or Google's, because it's probably changed much more frequently there. And what's nice about that is it'll give your site more of a sense of that there's community, there's people actively involved, there are things changing. Another good example is a lot of the data you can pull in from Facebook are things like, you know, music listens, people reading books, all that type of data. And if you're building a site, for instance, you know, to look at a movie directory or a TV directory, you can actually pull a lot of that data in and make it feel like an immersive experience right off the bat.
So if you'll forgive me, I'd like to put on my Flickr hat for a second and talk about the Flickr integration to Facebook. Because how many of you have used to use the Flickr updater into Facebook like 5 years ago, the one that Facebook built for us? Okay. And how many of you like the current integration? Awesome. That was my job. So basically, so one of the identity crises that we encountered at Flickr was that people are comfortable with their Flickr ID on Facebook, but they're not comfortable with their Yahoo ID showing their Flickr photos on Facebook. And a lot of that's because many of you probably use your real names on Yahoo, and now you're wondering, why are my Flickr photos now being associated with that account? So I think... I mean, everyone up here in the panel already alluded to it. It's very complex figuring it out, and I would encourage trying to keep things as clean as possible up front, such as using your at handle at Twitter.
So,
which would be equally opaque in all circumstances then, right?
No. It's always transparent. We know who you are. You just go to at something. It's actually...
It's wax pancake. How hard could that be?
Exactly.
So... The permissioning is probably equally complex, right? So, you know, there's always going to be no kind of better case than looking a deep look at your own use cases and what data you actually need. There's really interesting different philosophies between the systems. Twitter has a very simple model, which it's one of its advantages is simplicity, where the difference in permissioning is just in terms of whether I get access to data, read versus write, right? Facebook, on the other hand, has an incredibly nuanced system, but it's, you know, where I can basically specify, I want this data and this data and this data and these 14 other pieces of data, and maybe for 2 weeks and only on a full moon. But the user gets, you know, has to approve that, and so they get a very, you know, they're basically being asked to review a form. Whether or not they actually review it's a good question. And Google's kind of in the middle, I'd say, based on my experience implementing these. Why the different approaches? Like, what, you know?
Well, I think one of the fundamental trade-offs we're all trying to make that I don't think anybody has a perfect answer to is, you know, users and developers want convenience, but they also want control, right? And those are kind of at odds with one another, because the more you let people dial things in exactly the way they want them... you know, the more confusing potentially is, the more different states you have to manage on your end, the more potential for drop-off there is. And so we're all sort of trying to figure out where that sweet spot is. So, you know, Google has lots of different scopes of permission you can request for the different products, but within a given product, the scopes tend to be pretty broad. Like, I think you basically get calendar access, and then that's basically anything you want to do with calendar, as opposed to, like, read my week data or read this year. But, you know, you could imagine something more fine-grained than that, but then... whether the user really would understand it and whether you'd end up wanting more data later and would there be an escalation by that, you know, it's just sort of more trouble than it's worth. Or almost all these sites also, when the developer asks for a bundle of permissions, it's presented in a dialogue that's kind of take it or leave it, right? It's sort of here's all the stuff they want, and maybe you say, oh, I'm okay with all this stuff, but I don't really want them to see my birthday or have my email address, and you generally can't do that. Well, it's not that it never occurred to us that that was useful, but in lots of testing, the level of confusion both to users and developers, if that becomes something that can be really... you know, you could get back any subset, and you'd have to figure out how all your app would, like, put if statements around everything that used any pieces of them. It's just, it doesn't actually help in practice. And so that's why almost all these platforms have adopted a take it or leave it, with the one exception of Facebook letting you at least ask for additional stuff down the line. And I think that actually is a pretty cool idea, because sometimes it just contextualizes the permission a bit more, right? Like, if you want to sign up for a new site and it says, oh, they can tweet on your behalf, and you've never used the site before, it can be kind of scary, because you have to trust that they're not going to tweet randomly without your permission. But if later it's like, oh, actually there's a checkbox anyway and it's very transparent, then it would be fine, right? So there's definitely a fine-grained trade-off to be made there. And I think we're all fiddling at it in various different ways.
Yeah, I think how we approach it is broadly simplicity for both the user and the developer, but also transparency. So as Joseph said, you know, giving the developer the ability to actually prompt the user for permissions further down the app when it makes more sense, for instance. But I think broadly, how we approach our platform is, you know, we want to make products social. Basically, anything that has an internet connection, we'd love if it was social via Facebook. I think more importantly, we want to build businesses on our platform, which, you know, you know of many billion-dollar businesses that have been built on apps.facebook.com, but also things like the Open Graph, focusing on startups like Pinterest, including incumbent companies like Washington Post, which launched the Canvas app. Focusing on those kinds of businesses to actually grow them, I would say that's why our platform is so incredibly nuanced. Is broadly that's what we want to enable. We want to enable very easy SSO flow, as well as the ability to give lots of traffic to all of you.
I mean, at Twitter, if anything, that we really focus more on making things as usable as possible for the developers up front, which is why we were read and write. I mean, anyone who's done development understands the difference between that. But try explaining to a user what the difference is between reading a public tweet and reading a direct message. And that's actually was one of the projects I had to do at Twitter, was separate that out. And it was a very confusing developer advancement, although it was something that was highly demanded by our users because they didn't see a difference. Or they saw them as different, but read doesn't necessarily capture it. So, yeah, I think all of us are constantly experimenting, trying to find new ways, as well as respecting prior scopes and prior permissioning in a way that the user expects it, because we're also on the line. If we accidentally make a permission a little bit more lenient than your original intention when you gave it, then we're handling, we're giving data that you didn't necessarily have access to. So it's not just hard to figure out what is the right experiment, but we can't just A/B test this because these are permissions that are lasting the lifetime of the app. We want to make sure we don't screw any of you guys over in the process.
Well, and one point to the developers here is, you want to think about what permissions you want to ask for, and you generally don't want to ask for more than you need because, you may increase drop-off if users see that you're asking for a bunch of stuff they're not comfortable giving you and they decide they don't want to do it. And B, it's also, it's a liability on you, right? Once you have tokens that you're storing that have access to all this user data, you become a more, appealing target for people to try to hack into, and you have to protect that stuff that much more. And so I think oftentimes people realize that they actually don't want the responsibility of having access to data that they're not really actively using.
Yeah.
Because otherwise
it
can be tempting to say, well, just give me everything. But in most cases, I think you actually don't want to do that.
Yeah. That's an important point. I think just from the studies we've done, we see a precipitous drop for each additional permission you ask for. I think our mantra is you should just ask for what you need and nothing else, right? So the user should be able to accept your auth dialogue, hit allow, and then immediately understand where their data went, right? So if you're pulling in their friends, they should see their friends. If you pulled in their profile picture and name, they should be greeted with, hello, welcome back, Matt, with a big profile picture. So I think just being as transparent with the user as possible will earn you a lot of credit and will increase the number of users that are actually signing up for your service.
So I want to leave enough time to have audience questions, but a few kind of wrap-up things. Let's maybe move into more meta direction. So a few years ago, maybe even a few, maybe five, let's say, if we were here at South by Southwest doing this panel, we would be talking about OpenID. And
I think
it's
actually
really
wasn't an OpenID panel at South by Southwest 5 years ago.
yeah, some of us were probably. And that was the promise for the future, right? There was going to be standardized. You could use any provider. Even, my cosplay for Pet Site could be an OpenID provider. Mm-hmm. Now here we find ourselves here in Austin in 2012. And
no jetpacks and no OpenID.
No jetpacks, no OpenID. Yeah. I have to pick between,
Well, Google supports OpenID. But
yeah. A lot of these sites do provide OpenID. But the prevailing pattern is now I pick between a few very large, very powerful social networks, and I trust them to do this for me.
Yeah.
Is this a win for the internet? Why should we trust you guys with this?
I think in the short term, it's pretty clear why this has happened. These sites have taken off. There's a ton of usage, and there's a really hard set of problems. I mean, we didn't get a chance to go into all the nitty-gritty of not just onboarding on the web, but on mobile, right? Increasingly, mobile really matters, and getting the UX right of single sign-on on mobile and then getting you the same experience on the desktop and mobile so that you get the same usage, and there's just a lot to work out there. And so, Facebook and Twitter and Google have all really gone deep on that and have done some really innovative work, right? And so that's just something that it's hard. It's a high bar for all the sites out there that might want to be identity providers to do, right? I mean, you've probably all had that experience of trying to log into an app on a mobile phone and it brings up the web-based login form on your tiny mobile phone and it's a huge pain or whatever. And even within Facebook and Twitter, we had this thing morning, we were trying to play with Pinterest on the iPhone as a web page, and so it brings up the web Facebook auth dialogue, but you've got that Facebook app already in your phone, but it doesn't know to use it, and then you have to log in, right? So it's still kind of a mess, even with the best and brightest working really hard on it. And so You know, I just think that that's sort of what happened. Plus the fact that they are not only differentiated from each other, but it's a very competitive industry. And so they've all wanted to kind of tout their differences, which makes it harder to want to tout that you're all the same and it's just a standard. But long term, obviously, it's a terrible thing for the web, right? I mean, you need identity is probably the most core thing that will make the web really open in the future, because everybody's going to want to build these personal experiences. You're going to want to build reputation. And we all know that new companies are going to start and companies are going to wax and wane in prominence and all of that. And so it is obviously worrisome as just speaking personally as a developer and as someone who cares about technology and you know, entrepreneurship, that we are sort of essentially captive to these big companies that all give us terms of services that it's kind of take it or leave it. And I think in the short term, the benefit has been that they actually have created really good platforms. And more importantly, I think users, when we started talking about OpenID a few years ago, a lot of people said, "Is this is going to be, like, no one can figure out that, like, I log into Foursquare with my Google account and then I tweet and, like just, you know, they're used to having a separate account for every page." And I do think this model of log in with your X account that you've already got is now becoming something that users are much more familiar with, looking forward to. And so that is still progress towards the ultimate vision. But we are going to have to figure out how to get here from there.
Yeah, I think it really boils down to the promise of SSO, which is broadly simplicity, both for users and developers, right? And OpenID just, I think, had way too much complexity, both from a user perspective and a developer's perspective. I tried to implement it, and it was pretty confusing. I don't think it was a complete lost cause, though. Things like OAuth2 spun out of it, which is really solid, and it's definitely simplified the experience. I also think there weren't the right economics behind it. How many users did OpenID actually give you, right? Versus using something like a social network, which can deliver a lot of traffic for you. So I don't know if there was the right incentive either.
Mm-hmm. When a lot of the real, like, you think about identity providers in the real world, maybe it's your bank, or maybe it's your, you know, government, or maybe it's, you know, other companies you've got relationships with. You think about, like, you know, your frequent flyer cards, all that kind of stuff. Most of them are not really doing anything meaningful in online identity at all of any kind, right? Or even Apple, right? I mean, all these people have iTunes accounts now with credit cards and stuff, and it's just not really something you see everywhere. So I think it's also just a little early to sort of declare winners and losers, when most people, I would say, are still logging in with the username and password and filling out a form to start with, or you know, using one of these SSO things, but really in a fairly shallow way in the scheme of things. It's not something where it really is my, like, deep portable synced identity like we all sort of thought the vision of the future would be.
Yeah, I think sorry.
No, go ahead.
I think to go back to the original question, which is it actually a win for the web? I think it is. You know, you can argue all day about, is it a loss in terms of it's not open standards, et cetera. But I think broadly, we've seen proliferation of companies that are being built on top of these networks, based on the distribution they're getting. So again, I think it's a massive win in that perspective, because it's lifted all of us. It's allowed a lot of innovation on the internet. And yeah, I think it's an absolute win.
So I have to agree with Matt on this as well, that it is a win that we have these big networks helping support these synced identities across multiple sites. And the reason is that now there's a company that's accountable for helping you handle your identity. And we also have teams staffed up at our companies to help support users using this identity, as well as the developers that are trying to integrate with an identity. So at the end of the day, perhaps it's not as democratic as every single Joe Blow having a OpenID, but at the same time, we also have essentially the promises fulfilled. Users are able to easily integrate with their products. They have a trust in terms of who's owning their identity, and developers have someone to help them go through that process.
Okay, I'll be nice again. And in all seriousness, I have been benefiting greatly from SSO and the companies I've been at. So the main theme still that we haven't touched on, and we need to wrap up to get to questions, so I'll just leave it at the... There is a lot of complexity, and that complexity that's being traded, in that in order to trade that complexity from the user into the system, the developer takes on the complexity now, right? SSO actually can greatly simplify the sign-in experience for users, but as people building the sites right now, one of the reasons it sucks so often is that we're taking all the complexity, we're taking all the edge cases.
And it's moving quickly, and so most of the sites aren't following all the best practices, right? So I think that's partly why, as a user, it feels like a confusing muddle, because the implementations are all pretty inconsistent. But I think a lot of that is just that they haven't really caught up with you know, the latest and greatest ways to do everything.
So before we move into questions, last question. Your choice. Either tell me the one thing that you think we as an industry can do or work towards to make this better as web developers, to make this a simpler, easier to manage system, or if you prefer, an oddball prediction about what will go crazy.
Personally, I think we need to lead more by example in showing how you can have a best practice sort of end-to-end system with what does your sign-up look like, what does your login look like, what does it look like when you have a mobile app, what does it look like when you want to have an API, how do you do account recovery, what do you do when profiles change? I mean, I don't think there... We were trying to think when we were starting this panel, what are some examples we could point to that, like, just nail it, that you'd be like, go copy what they did? And we were having trouble really picking up. There's sites we like in a lot of different aspects, but there's all
Lanyard.
Things... There's all things, yeah, that are definitely good. I mean, there's parts of Foursquare that are great. There's parts of TripIt that are great. There's parts of those. But there's also little things that are pretty rough around the edges still. And so I think it's probably our job to show what a best practice looks like. Google's done a little bit of that with this identity toolkit that we've put up where it's like we took an open source e-commerce store site and figured out, showed how you could integrate with multiple providers and walk through a bunch of stuff like that. But more of that, I think, would really give people a recipe to follow where we would actually be sort of proud of the results. Because I think there's too little of that given that actually a lot of these hard problems have been worked out. So yes, you have to think about account merge. Yes, you have to think about, you know, remember this boxes and all that kind of stuff. But we at least have reasonably good answers for them now, whereas we didn't really have good answers for them even a couple of years ago. But I don't think the message has really gotten out. I think we could do more to help there.
So actually, the area that's the most interest to me is, actually, how many of you have read Structure and Interpretation of Computer Programs by Hal Abelson, Purple Book? So Hal Abelson is now doing a lot of work in terms of information accountability. So it's not just in terms of how your data is shared, but also who uses it for what purpose. So I'm sure you guys have seen the lawsuit about the substitute teacher who's fired because they're taking a picture with a red Solo cup on Facebook. Is that how she intended that information to be shared? Who ultimately made the call that that was the proper use of that photo when that wasn't the intention? I think that's going to be starting to come up more and more when you come up on these identity platforms. And this is also something that we need to become more transparent with users in terms of when they do put data out into the public ecosystem, how it can be used in ways that they may not expect. Check it out, information accountability.
I think briefly on the first question, I think Joseph nailed it for the most part. But broadly, I feel like at the low end of the stack, things like OAuth, I would like to see much more convergence across companies because it's not really something that affects the flavor of the platform in some perspective. But it's important from a developer's perspective because auth is auth is auth, right, across all these networks. And it'll make it much easier if you don't have to deal with one-legged auth, two-legged auth, three-legged auth, SIG, XAuth. Like, the list goes on. It's insane. And I had to deal with it on top of six or seven platforms before Facebook, and it was maddening. And I think the value of having differentiation is, you know, the distribution or data you can pull. I think quickly on the oddball prediction, I think what will change is based off the device in your pocket, your phone, you'll see a lot of new things cropping up around how you actually authenticate with devices, especially when they have NFC chips. You know, right now you have to enter your username and password on like game pads on the Xbox, and it's insane. And I think, you know, that will be what we're talking about next year.
I think browsers might be a dark horse too, because you know you're increasingly logging into your browser, and it knows all the different sites you're going to, so it could potentially be this trusted middleman in a way that, because especially when all the big cloud providers don't work with each other, users are kind of screwed unless they have some trusted middleman to take the data. And so browsers or devices might be that. I mean, it's a hard issue, but I think there's some interesting work going on there at Mozilla and Chrome and others.
All right. Thanks, guys. We're going to open up to questions now. I think they're coming around with microphones.
Are the mics yet?
Are you guys? Oh, there may be a particular place for them. Either that or they'll come to you.
Hi. Some of the sites that you see nowadays, there are situations where sites choose to use all three providers just because they cannot trust just one or they don't want to have just one solution. But then if the site is not used very frequently, let's say people come every 6 months, and we know from a user experience standpoint that people will remember whatever context they are last. So if I was using Facebook the first time, I may have logged in as Facebook.
Yeah.
6 months later, I come back and I was on my Gmail account, and then I log in as Gmail.
Yeah.
And then for that site, those are two different people.
Yeah.
So
it's a big challenge.
Are you guys trying to solve that?
Yeah, there's nothing much we can do. There are two things you can do. One is most of these sites have ways that you can tell whether the user is currently logged into any of the providers. And so you can at least sort of hint and see which ones you could use. But they may be logged into all three, right? I mean, I'm probably logged into Google, Facebook, and Twitter on my computer right now. You can also cookie the computer and figure out which provider they used last time and try to put them back in a state that looks like what they last came with. That's a little bit hit or miss, too, because sometimes people share computers. Sometimes you're on a new computer, and then you can't figure out what to click on. The other thing, though, is if you get an email address from the user, then if they log in with a different account but it has the same email address, you can still use the email as the ID. So that's actually a really useful technique because people tend to use the same email address on the multiple providers. And then the last thing is you just need to make sure that when you onboard somebody with a new account, you say, hey, do you already have an account here? If so, click here and give them a merge flow, because I think that's really where the confusion comes from, is when you don't recognize the fact that this person may well have come back and just used a different account that they've already got. So it's just really important to ask, not just on the login screen, but after the SSO, hey, do you already have an account here? And it's better to do that sooner, too, because once you've got two accounts with data, you know, merging them can be pretty painful. But if you can catch it right at the beginning, usually then you can just link the credential and you're good. Because that's what's something we didn't say, we should have said, is that if you're going to support multiple providers, you really need to make sure that users can use more than one at the same time and hang them all off the same account. So you just need to make sure that you have a, you know, many-to-one relationship.
I think just to add on that, the biggest best practice I always recommend to developers is there's a good chance that if a user auth with Facebook, they're going to be signed into Facebook when they hit your website again. And it's very easy to call a JavaScript function to actually understand if the user is, you know, authed user of yours, and then just auto-log them in. I think that's the simplest thing to do. I mean, there's some complexity that Joseph nailed, but it blows my mind how many sites don't just auto-log the user in when they've already authed with the website, and that fixes a lot of problems.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, because they can always sign out if you got it wrong.
Yeah, one of the things that I've found in doing this is every single piece of information you can get query against in your database before you create a new account. And in the new system we're designing Bitly, we're actually going so far as to try to do fuzzy matching on that. So if we get a user ID that's pretty similar, we're going to try to make a best guess as to whether this might be the same person, and if so, give them an opportunity to merge rather than. You have to be very careful to do that respective of privacy because you don't want to actually be exposing someone else's account. So in some cases, you know, if you have enough information that you know it's probably the same person, you can just ask them to enter their password to confirm before doing that merge. In other cases, you may want to actually be saying, you need to tell, we know you have an account already, or we think we have an account already, tell us your user ID. But you unfortunately really... in my experience, cannot depend on the user to know that they have an account already. Even if you say, click here if you have an account already, people will create new accounts. Deduplication is probably the hardest problem I've found in doing multiple SSO.
Let's get some more questions to give faster answers.
I'm a little curious about anyone who integrates one of your SSO solutions deflects any kind of hacking risk. Do you get more hacking risk on those accounts on your own sites?
You're saying, does it make more risk for us or more risk for you as the developer?
Yeah, have you seen an increase in hacking attempts on users from an SSO site?
It's actually the opposite. One of the biggest risks to the big sites is people just reuse the same password on a smaller site. And so the smaller site gets compromised, and then you can use that password to get into the bigger site. And so that's one of the reasons why we all like having SSO as big providers, is that it lowers the risk when you're just getting an OpenID token or an OAuth token or whatever, that same password isn't sprayed out in all these fairly insecure databases. So, and of course, in the big sites, we all already see lots more behavioral data about which computers you're on and how often you log in and all that kind of stuff. And so we actually get more visibility, and it helps us be more secure and detect anomalies and that kind of thing. So, and plus, people are always trying to hack into the big sites, let's be honest. And so the fact that you can now log into Bitly or whatever doesn't really change our, like, you know, how attractive a target we are.
All right, one of the great things that we rolled out recently at Twitter was SSL. You can now enable default across all new accounts. And so that was also helping, not just in terms of hacking, but also in terms of international login.
More questions.
Okay. How close are you for internal organizations? Like the internal, what would you tell an agency who's about ready to spend $3 million, $5 million on an IDM system?
On a what? Sorry, can you speak closer to
an identity management system, such as an Oracle Fusion or even a Novell.
For SSO inside the enterprise?
Mm-hmm.
Google's probably the only one focused on that of the three of us, but if you're a Google Apps domain, we support OpenID for all the accounts, and so you actually can use your Google Apps as SSO for other apps that want to be part of that. And increasingly, other enterprise apps are figuring out how to do SSO with Google because we have this Google Apps marketplace where you can plug it in and actually shows up next to your Gmail and calendar and whatever as your business SaaS app. And so I think that is definitely a trend. I mean, unfortunately, the enterprise space is a mess. A lot of these sites still just do LDAP and Active Directory, and people have to like copy and paste their user lists, and it's a big mess. And so I'd love to say that there's a great solution there, but it's just taking a while for more of those other enterprise companies to catch up. So sometimes you really do still have to deploy these painful systems. But
5 years, say they've been combined? Or are we going to say?
I think in the case of Google, it's getting a lot better just because more and more enterprises are going cloud-based. And once you're going cloud-based with modern systems, they already know how to do this more often than the big legacy systems. I don't think most companies would be comfortable having their employees use their consumer Twitter and Facebook accounts as their corporate SSO just because they tend to want to keep those worlds separate. It's the worst of both worlds at Google because they get separate accounts, but they're also Google accounts, and then you end up with two copies of everything, and it's kind of confusing. And so I kind of wish I would have just used my consumer account everywhere, and when they fire me, they can just revoke my access to the internal data or something like that.
If I was at a large company, would you really want them having read permissions on your Facebook profile and all its data?
Well, there's that. Yeah, do the employees want to, most employees, when they're on Facebook, they're bitching about their boss, so there's that aspect too. And throwing sheep. Well, that's actually kind of a dated reference by now.
Question. Todd Loughborough at MIT. So you've talked about the upside of this, that it's easier for sites to use. A little bit of conversation about the downside. So all three of you represent organizations who, in essence, make most of your money through micro-targeted advertising. And so how does the user know that what they're doing on the cat cosplay site doesn't immediately go into a database and they're going to start seeing ads for little pink tutus for the cats? So how does the user get comfortable of what's shared back to the Facebooks, the Googles, and the Twitters when they use it for SSO?
It's mostly the privacy policy of the sites. Although, actually, I would argue there's not nearly enough of that happening in the positive sense, not necessarily for ad targeting. But if you think about all the sites that take SSO from us, how much data do you create on that site that could be fed back in? Like, I made a really good Foursquare list of friends based on Twitter and Facebook, but I never got to improve my Twitter or Facebook friends list based on all the people I connected to on Foursquare, right? So I think one of the real potential that hasn't really been met for SSO is creating more of these kind of virtuous cycles where the data you're creating at the edge, which is often, because we're sort of platforms, right? So at the edge is often where the interesting stuff is happening, that can get pushed back. And you see that for stream distribution, but you don't tend to see that as much for core profile and social graph information. So I think when users see a seamless experience, they expect it to go in both directions. Now, for targeting stuff, obviously, users have to be okay with what is being targeted for personalization. But in most cases, if the companies aren't being evil, users are pretty happy to get a good service. And so I think, if anything, we're dropping the ball too much on opportunities to make the whole process more seamless and personalized in a bidirectional way.
So I think we're about to get booted off the stage. So last question, and then we'll hang around afterwards if you want to come bug us in person or throw stuff at us.
Hey, Cynthia. When integrating social sign-on, how come Twitter does not return the email address?
Does not return what?
Email
address. Why does Twitter not return email address?
Well, so...
Is that a question?
Yeah, specifically because Facebook enables returning email address. So the email address is something that we found that our users don't expect to be shared because they believe that that's something that's private information. And we advocate to our partners that this is an important piece of data for you, ask for it. I mentioned Lanyard in jest earlier, but I really do think that their integration is fantastic. And they enable a user to add their email address when they're comfortable. And I think it's great, it's well done design-wise, visually, and to the user. It gives them the trust.
All right.
Thanks, guys.
Cool, thanks.